So the scripture, if you've looked at your bulletin, that Linda is going to read is very long. And as with many very long scriptures, there are stories within stories. And what are at the central part of this story, though, is a miracle that happens. Malia was just talking about it. There's this miracle of this man who was born blind and comes to see Jesus. Actually, comes to Jesus. Then he can see Jesus. And Jesus does something to return his sight to him. That's the general big part of the story, but there are all these other parts of the stories, because what happens so often when we read the biblical stories, the literal becomes metaphorical. And what we begin to see is embedded in these 38 verses that we're going to ask Linda to read are stories within there that are all sorts of ways into which we see and don't see, in which we are blind and blinded, in which we see with our hearts and don't see with our hearts. So, Chris, can you put up the first slide up here? And I want to just show this to you. Next one. This. So here's what I want you to be listening for. And what we're going to do is I'm going to have Linda read just parts. And I want you to see, is the people that were just happening in this story, those who can truly see with the eyes of their hearts so that they could say, once I was blind, but now I see, or once I was blinded, but now I see, or are they people who have eyes that work, but their hearts are blind? So once I saw, but now I'm blind, or once I thought I saw, but really was blind and probably still am, or if you're Jesus, which is, of course, I've got the eyes of Jesus, so I can kind of see everything. Interesting in this story, Jesus appears in the beginning, and then the whole rest of the story, for the most part, until the end, is all about people talking about Jesus, what Jesus has done, but he's not even in the story anymore. He just gets a cameo in the beginning and towards the end. So, Linda, would you begin us with just the first, I think it's the first five verses.
The verses are from John 9, 1 through 38, and I'll read the first five. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man who had been blind since birth. Jesus' disciples asked, "Teacher, why was this man born blind? Was it because he or his parents sinned?" "No, it wasn't," Jesus answered. "But because of his blindness, you will see a God work a miracle for him. As long as it is day, we must do what the one who sent me wants me to do. When night comes, no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light for the world."
So in this section, we've got Jesus and we've got the disciples. So we're going to give Jesus, this is the way he's seen it, he gets the gray. Of course, I've got the eyes of Jesus, so I really can see with my heart and everything else. But the disciples, what color do you think they would fit here? Anyone have an idea? Were they, once I was blind, but now I see, once I was blinded, once I saw, but now I'm blind, or once I thought I saw, but really was blind? Anyone have an idea? No ideas whatsoever. This is David, tell us what we're supposed to think time. So let me tell you what enter into my weird brain for a minute. I think they are right here in the green. Once I saw, but now I'm blind. Because think about this. At the moment in which this story is happening, in the Gospel of John, they've been traveling with Jesus for a year and a half. They have seen a lot. They have seen an awful lot. They have seen healings. They have heard a message of love and inclusiveness and everything else. They have seen. But all of a sudden, they've returned to a blind place. They've returned to a trope. They've returned to a paradigm that allows them, in a very stratified society, to find someone who is worse off than they are. So they ask Jesus a question. Here's a blind person over here. You don't see them walking up to the blind person. They're just pointing at this blind person, and they're saying, is it his parents or he who sinned? The trope is simply that if there is something that is out of the norm, blind being out of the norm for them at that time, if there's something that is out of the norm, then someone must have done something wrong. And that wrong had to be either the parents or the person. And what it allows them to do is, number one, put the blind person over there as an other. Just keep them over there because clearly some sin happened. And since we are a society in which we're really focused on righteousness, we don't want to be with someone who has obviously sinned, and it allows us to keep them over there. Now, what I find interesting, and why I think they're the green there, once I saw but now I'm blind, again, they've been traveling with Jesus for a year and a half. Why don't we read them going, Jesus, can we heal this person? We've seen it before. They don't ask that question. They don't look around each other and say, you know what, maybe we could pool our resources together a little bit and at least give this man, because we've discovered he's a beggar too, give this man a meal or perhaps provide for him better. We don't have a lot, but we can pool our resources. They don't say that. They don't look at him and say, maybe he should be one of us. The rest of us were kind of outcasts. The rest of us were sort of out of the norm, just not quite as out of the norm. But maybe we should ask him to be part of us. They don't ask that question. So I'm convinced that in the world they live in, there is seeing, but they're also blinded at times. And thank God for the disciples. Let me just say this, because if they can mess up, and they're walking daily with Jesus, then, you know, it gives us a bit of an excuse as well. We don't have to be perfect. And here's the good news is they do get it. We wouldn't be sitting here 2,000 years later if they didn't eventually get it. But if we're finding that we are sort of like this in our following and not following, blinded and not blinded, it's okay, but we need to keep working at it. So, story continues.
After Jesus said this, he spit on the ground. He made some mud and smeared it on the man's eyes. Then he said, go wash off the mud in Siloam Pool. The man went and washed in Siloam, which means one who is sent. When he had washed off the mud, he could see.
Okay, so this is an easy one. The man, which one of these is he? Yellow, blue, green, purple. Yellow, thank you. Once I was blind, but now I see. If I were making a movie, this is the money shot. This is it. This is where it all comes down to, is once I was blind, but now I see. But the truth of the matter is, maybe it happened literally. It's not the only blind story. The Apostle Paul is blinded on the road to Damascus, and it takes him days of hearing the voice of God, the voice of Jesus speaking in his head before he is able to finally see, when he's able to see that it's not just his eyes that have been blind, but his heart that has been so blind for all of these years. And the truth of the matter is, whether it happened literally or not, we all know the metaphor very well. We all know the metaphor very well. We just sang Amazing Grace that has it in it. I was blind, but now I see. I was lost, but now I'm found. John Newsom, when he wrote this book, wrote this hymn in the 1750s, was a slave trader. His boat was going aground. He called out to God. He was saved. He found it a miracle. He found amazing grace. Of course, it took him 14 more years before he quit the slave trade. We don't usually talk about that, but the point is that that began his moment of conversion, where his blindness was being taken away. I can tell you stories of interns, of a young woman who was at Camp Mokulele, who came as an AmeriCorps volunteer while I was there, came as a person that carried just a cloud around her, carried a heart that was heavy. And in the 3 months she spent there, the miracle of that place of grace began to transform her. And when she left, she was different and she was on a different pathway. And 3 years later, she applied to be a year-round intern at Camp Mokulele'ia, and in that year, that grace of the place that is so beautiful and so amazingly wondrous impacted her in such a way that she came to me and she says, I would like to be baptized. And I'd like to be baptized right here in the waters of Mokulele'ia. And her life shifted. She was blind, but now she saw. And how many times do we hear right here from where Linda is standing, do we hear the stories of those of you who have entered into this church at one time or another, blind, hurt, lost, and found within this space and within the people of this space a sense of grace that allowed you to see again. Val is compiling many of those stories right now in a booklet of our reflections that come from the time in which we share as an invitation offering. And they are stories of grace, where we were blind, but now we see. So carry on, Linda, please.
The man's neighbors and the people who had seen him begging wondered if he could really be the same man. Some of them said he was the same beggar, while others said he only looked like him. But he told them, "I am that man." "Then how can you see?" they asked.
Okay, we're going to pause one more time. All right, so let's talk about the neighbors. Okay, which color? Yellow, blue, green, violet, gray? Who are they? Gray? Did I hear gray? Violet? All right, so if you're jumping into my weird mind, it's violet. Because they're in some ways operating with a very similar, sorry, Linda, I'm referring to all these colors and you can't see them. Sorry. They're operating from a very similar paradigm that the disciples must have been operating from. They're operating from a world in which they see things differently, because here's the fact that we hear in those few sentences. One, they are his neighbors, and two, he is a beggar. If I were the man, I might be looking at his neighbors and saying, "What have you done for me lately? Why am I out?" If you are my neighbors, if you are the people that Leviticus has told us, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, if you are the people that are truly my neighbors, why am I begging on the streets? Why? Because I think that they are operating from a paradigm in which they think they see the truth. They are seeing the truth that has been told them. You can find scriptures that will say the sins of the father are visited upon the children of generations to come. And so because we can find the scriptural precedent, we can then live in a place which allows us to keep somebody there as an other, keep somebody there on the margin. What they have allowed themselves to do in their pursuit of righteousness is to lose their hearts. And so they think that they are seeing, but they actually have been blind all this time. Because if they were not, he would not be a beggar. He would be cared for. Is that not what we call ourselves to? Is that not the standard that we call ourselves to as well? To try as much as possible to be present to those who are our neighbor, our community, to care. We fall short, but it is what we aspire to time and time again. Okay, carrying on. A little bit longer one this time, because I know you all are going, there's 38 verses, and we're only through verse 7 right now. We're going to be here forever, so thank you, Linda.
He answered, "Someone named Jesus made some mud and smeared it on my eyes. He told me to go and wash it off in Siloam Pool. When I did, I could see." Where is he now? They asked. "I don't know," he answered. The day when Jesus made the mud and healed the man was a Sabbath. So the people took the man to the Pharisees. They asked him how he was able to see, and he answered, "Jesus made some mud and smeared it on my eyes. Then after I washed it off, I could see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man, Jesus, doesn't come from God. If he did, he would not break the law of the Sabbath." Others asked, "How could someone who is a sinner work such a miracle?" Since the Pharisees could not agree among themselves, they asked the man, "What do you say about this one who healed your eyes?" "He is a prophet," the man told them. But the Jewish leaders would not believe that the man had once been blind. They sent for his parents and asked them, "Is this the son that you said was born blind? How can he see now?" The man's parents answered, "We are certain that he is our son, and we know that he was born blind. But we don't know how he got his sight or who gave it to him. Ask him. He's old enough to speak for himself. The man's parents said this is because they were afraid of their leaders. The leaders had already agreed that no one was to have anything to do with anyone who said Jesus was the Messiah.
Okay, Pharisees. What color do we get here? Linda, you want to come check the colors out? Yellow, blue, purple, gray, green. What do you think? Again, in my weird mind, we're back at green. Once I saw, but now I'm blind. I feel for the Pharisees. The way that we read about them in the biblical story is they are the antagonist always to Jesus. They are the opposite that he is having to push against. And so we always paint them in a bad light. But the truth of the matter is, these are people who come to be Pharisees for the most part, most likely because they love God, because they love the scriptures. The Jewish people were not the only people to have written scriptures, but some of theirs 2,000 years ago is more refined than any other religious tradition in the world at that time. And at the center of their religious tradition that was so well refined and so well defined was the law. And the law was given, if you imagine, it is as if we're driving down a four-lane highway and you've got some guardrails over here and you've got those little bumpy things that define the lanes and everything else. And they're to give us parameters to stay within so that we can be safe and travel along. But what had become happening over time was we've gone from a four-lane highway to a narrow one-lane road that has those little red light cameras every 100 feet. So everything that you're doing is being watched and being judged, and we have taken this which is supposed to give us the fullness of life, and we've made it an item of judgment. That's what's become a part of the Pharisees, and that's what Jesus pushes against all the time, is that sense of judgment. And we are hard on them, but I don't know about you all, but I know I've had my Pharisee days. I've had those days. I think about myself as an adolescent who was so determined to live a life that was pure and perfect. And so if my friends were drinking or getting high, I had no place for them. Well, you can well imagine in high school, I didn't have a whole lot of friends then. The same way, sexual morality was so important to me. Well, you know what? It's high school. It's a good chance that I lost a lot of friends in that arena as well, because I was so filled with judgment. It began to turn for me at a time when I was about 16 years old, and I was privileged to be part of a two-month journey, international journey, with a bunch of students my age. And I diligently kept a daily journal. It was supposed to be about what we did, but it became about all of them and all the things that they were doing that I was so disapproving of. And I wrote it, and it was in, and somehow it got found. And they started to read it. And they called me on it. And it was devastating. It was devastating because I could finally see through their eyes what I couldn't have seen through my own eyes. And I am convinced that the role that Jesus is desperately trying to play with the Pharisees is exactly the same thing. That as he pushes against them, it is not pushing against them in a way of antagonism, but pushing against them so that they might be able to see in the way that they once saw, in the way in which they fell in love with the scriptures and they fell in love with God, that they might be able to once see again rather than be blinded by a world that was defined by judgment, by all of that. So they are like us at so many times in our own lives, and it goes in and out, in which we once could see, but we become blind. Linda?
The leaders called the man back and said, "Swear by God to tell the truth. We know that Jesus is a sinner." The man replied, "I don't know if he's a sinner or not. All I know is that I used to be blind, but now I can see." "What did he do to you?" they asked. "How did he heal your eyes?" The man answered, "I have already told you once, and you refused to listen. Why do you want me to tell you again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" The leaders insulted the man and said, "You are his follower. We are followers of Moses. We are sure God spoke to Moses. We don't even know where Jesus comes from." "How strange," the man replied. "He healed my eyes, and yet you don't know where he comes from. We know that God listens only to people who love and obey him. God doesn't listen to sinners. And this is the first time in history anyone has ever given sight to someone born blind. Jesus could not do anything unless he came from God."
So we know where the Pharisees are landing. We just talked about them. But now this man has returned with a lot of voice. Where do you think he might land here? Is he yellow, blue, green, purple, gray? My belief is he's right here in the blue. "Once I was blinded." In fact, he was a man that had been blinded by society, not just because he is born blind, but he is also a person who has had to come and live into the norms of society, which basically has meant that he is nothing. And he is cast aside. And he has no voice. And what is remarkable about the last paragraph that Linda just read for us is that he has a voice. This is a man who is nothing in society, who is speaking truth to power to those Pharisees, who's even challenging them, saying, "Do you want to become a disciple of Jesus? Is that why you're asking me? I know what I know. Only God could do what has happened here." He has found his voice. He once was blinded, but now he sees. I want to tell you a quick story about a person by the name of Bree Newsom. Can you put her picture up there? This is Bree Newsom. And she is a woman who's a filmmaker and done a whole lot of different things in the world of working for justice and voting rights. And Bree Newsom's story begins before she was born. She's born in the 1980s. But in the 1960s, in 1961, in South Carolina, where she was from, a decision was made in the state legislature to fly the Confederate flag once again. The Confederate flag had come down in 1865 from this first state in the Union to secede from the Union. But when the Civil War ended, the Confederate flag came down. But in 1961, almost 100 years later, the civil rights movement was strong. There were victories that were happening within the civil rights movement. There were people that were not only saying that the world has to change, they were demanding that change. And so the decision of the all-white legislature of South Carolina in 1961 was to put up a symbol that would make sure that those folks stayed in their place. And so with great intentionality, the decision was made to resurrect the Confederate flag from its 95-year absence and fly it once again. And that was the case for 55 years. Bree Newsom, born in the 1980s, is amongst a whole bunch of folks who find this ultimately in the 2010s or so intolerable. No longer is it appropriate to fly this flag, which is a symbol of domination, a symbol of death, a symbol of enslavement. No longer is it fair to fly this flag. And so she and others decide that someone has to do a direct action and has to go to the state legislature, the state capitol, climb that flagpole, and take the flag down. That flagpole is surrounded by a chain link fence and by guards. And so she's gathered in a meeting where there are folks, black and white, that are saying, "We need to do this." And folks are saying, "I will step up." Some of her white brothers and sisters are saying, "I will step up. It is important for us to be an ally." Some of, mostly males, said, "We'll do it. Black and white, we'll do it," because it's great physicality that is required to scale a 30-foot flagpole. And then someone says, "I really believe it needs to be a black woman." And at that moment, Bree Newsom talks about the fact that she got really quiet and went into prayer and then heard herself say, I will do it. So she begins to train. She begins to train on how to climb a flagpole like this. And in the midst of that training, on June the 17th, 2015, a 21-year-old white man by the name of Dylan Roof walks into the AME Emmanuel Church in Charlotte, South Carolina, and kills 9 people. And he is a person who is wearing the paraphernalia of a Confederate flag. And at that point, Bree Newsom knows the time has come. And what I love about this story is that she has lived an entire life in which she has been told by the dominant society that she is nothing, and like this blind man who is willing to speak truth to power, she says, no, that is not who I am. So 10 days later, while others distract the police that are there by jogging around in circles, she and another person climb the chain link fence, go to that pole, and they begin to climb. So, Chris, and there she is at the top. And at the top, after she has taken that flag down, she says these words. Where did they go? In the name of Jesus, this flag has come down. You come against me with hatred and oppression and violence. I come against you in the name of God. This flag comes down today. She knew as she climbed that flagpole that she could die. She could die from falling. She could die from the police officers who now would notice her, who could shoot her down because she was not obeying what they were saying. She knew she could die, but she knew that she had to do something, particularly in light of what had just happened in Charlotte at AME Emmanuel Church, which, by the way, when the governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, said that the flag shall fly at half mast, the American flag at the Capitol came to half mast, but the Confederate flag still flew at full mast. Yes. So it is in this light that this person who was blinded says, now I can see and now I can be. She takes the flag down. She comes down the pole, and she is arrested. Her story continues, and we don't have time for it all, but what is interesting is 12 days later, that governor, Nikki Haley, who is now running for president, Nikki Haley signed a proclamation that said that that flag would forever come down. The Confederate flag does not fly above the capital of South Carolina anymore. Partly because of the efforts of a person like Bree Newsom. Now, the rest of the scriptures that if I ask Linda read the rest of the scriptures, they're really the ones that a lot of folks will concentrate on. They'll be the ones where the blind man now comes to Jesus, and they will, and Jesus will say, do you know who I am? And he will say, well, who are you? And Jesus will explain, and it will end with, and Jesus, and he worshiped Jesus. And that's sort of where most sermons will end. But I think the real key point is right here when this person, this blind person, has found his voice, has found his heart, and is able to now see himself fully. The scriptures tell us, and you've heard me tell you this many times, that in the very first chapter of Genesis, the scriptures tell us that all that God has created is wonderfully made. And that at the end of creation, we are declared to be good and blessed, all of us good and blessed. That includes this blind man. That includes Jesus. It also includes the Pharisees, the neighbors, the parents, all good and blessed, but we go astray. We lose that sense of that wild wonderfulness that is who we are. It gets tamped down and taken away. John O'Donohue writes these words in the book called Walking in Wonder. He says, one of the sad things today is that so many people are frightened by the wonder of their presence. They are dying to tie themselves into a system, a role, or to an image, or to a predetermined identity that other people have actually settled on for them. In this story that we just read together, even the villains of the story, even the horrible Pharisees, as we want to be able to cast them over and over are simply those who have allowed themselves to be taken in by a system that is designed to put some people off to the side and elevate a few. This man says, I will no longer be that blind person. John O'Donohue says there, this identity that we take on may be a totally at variance with the wild energies. I love this. The wild energies that are rising inside of our souls. Many of us get very afraid and we eventually compromise. We settle for something that is safe rather than engaging the danger and the wildness that is in our hearts. One of the greatest sins is the unlived life. Not to allow yourself to become the chief executive of the project that is your life. God has created each one of us wild and wonderful, good and blessed. And we are called to be the chief executive of that project. And to do so, we have to be able to see ourselves in the eyes of the heart that Jesus sees us, in the eyes of the heart that God sees us, and then we have to commit to do the same for all others in this world. That's the project that we are on. That's what it means to be the executive of our wild and wonderful life, to be able, whether we've been blinded or not, to be able to fully see with the eyes of our heart. So I want to invite us to a word of prayer as we enter into our time of prayer. And this prayer was written by the Reverend Dr. Grace Jisun Kim, a professor of theology at Earlham School of Religion, one of Sojourner Magazine's 8 Christian Women Shaping the Church in 2023. Read along with me, please. Creator God, thank you so much for creating each one of us uniquely and special. Help us to celebrate our diversities and embrace those who are so different from us. Grant us your wisdom to choose and live wisely. Grant us your peace so we can be peacemakers. Grant us your love so we may love our enemies. Gracious God, aid us to live with gratitude for all the many blessings that you have bestowed upon us. Support us to use our gifts faithfully to further your kingdom here on earth. Thank you for your grace, mercy, and love for us. Amen.